Watch you spill your beans. Watch you spill your beans. Watch you spill your beans.
How long have they been on this rock?
The Sun Beacons, sponsored by Tommy John and DoorDash. I'm Victor Mattis, and this is Sunny Bunch. Last, just a reminder, the Sun Beacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look on a podcast and search for Sun Beacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? Okay, moving right along.
Hi, Victorino. Vic, did you do that haircut or did you take yourself out?
Thank you for asking, JVL. I was thinking about going back to my barber, Habib, from Morocco, from Casablanca. You have to call ahead. You can't. There's no walk-ins. I think this is statewide, right? You have and they
for Mr. Popularity like you, I'm sure he'd make an exception.
There's no sitting around. I do like to sit around and glad hand, as you know, but I'm not going to. I want to follow the letter of the law. I don't want to get Habib in trouble. So, but no, today I did it on my own, and I thought I did 85% of it on my own, and. So I have my Norelco razor with it's a 5mm, which I use a number 2 clip, and they don't have those number classifications on the Norelco. It just goes by millimeter, but the closest thing is about a 5, between a 5 and a 6. So I did a 5. The only problem is the back.
Turn around. Let me see it. Hey, that's a good look.
Well, that's because Kate did the back part. So she's always scared. I've got this bump in the back of my head.
Oh, I know all about that.
You know about that. And
spill your beans.
That's where they put it in the matrix. You know, they plug me in the back there. So anyway, so yes, I
spent a lot of time staring at that bump on the back of your head.
You never told me all that time. Okay. Wow.
All right.
Wow, this is taking a very interesting direction here.
I can't stop thinking about this movie. That's why.
Oh, yes. Well, Okay, we'll get to that in a second. More than a second. Do you guys have anything you want to share?
Can we talk about that picture I sent you guys on Saturday?
What picture? I don't remember.
I texted you guys about it. So I was cleaning out both my garage
You found some old tech
attic
stuff.
Number one, because my house has two separate attics. And I threw out, I don't know, 4,000 pounds of stuff. And I opened one box, which had in it all of my technology.
From what year?
From decades past. And in one box, I had both my Sega Dreamcast player, along with all the memory units and controllers and doodads, a corded phone for which I had purchased an extra long cord.
So you could walk around.
Aftermarket extra long cord so that I could go to literally
mobile.
Every place in my studio apartment in Courthouse Arlington, I could get to every square inch of it using that extra long cord. Why did I keep this? I have not owned
a telephone
in 20 years. Why did I keep this stupid cord? I mean, and also the phone itself wasn't that expensive. It's like a $15 phone. But the big one was my HD DVD player, for which I paid, I think, $400, maybe $500 at the time when it came out. And I don't understand why I held on to it, but I literally just threw it away. And but the best was Sonny, whose response to the text was, I still have my HD DVD player set up, literally, so I can watch my HD DVD of Blade Runner once a year.
Literally.
How many movies do you have on that on HD DVD?
I still probably have something like 10 movies on HD DVD.
I should have kept mine and sent them to you. I could have doubled your library.
It would have been amazing. We probably had some overlap.
I remember, JVL, you showed me part of Casablanca because the clarity, it was so sharp.
Oh,
it was like you're at RKO watching it or something. 1930 or 43 or whatever it was.
I remember
the TV wasn't an HDTV.
It's still... All right, no, it wasn't, but it was still that good. It was so good.
Was it rear projection? Limits of 420i?
Yeah. I bought an HD DVD player in part. I can't remember if this is true now or if I'm just retconning it in my head. But I bought an HD DVD player in part because I had a CRT HD TV. So like a cathode ray tube.
Weighed 900 pounds.
It weighed 130 something, but it was only like a 36 inch diagonal screen. So it was small and incredibly heavy. But the best part was it didn't even have an HDMI port. It had component cable. So one of the reasons I bought the HD DVD player was because it had component cables, and maybe the Blu-rays did as well. And I might just be like retconning this all in my head.
So but, this thing could not have been 1080 or 720. It must have been 480.
No, it was 1080. It was 1080.
No.
What? It was.
Really? The full 1080? Because there was a while when they would classify. So not standard definition was 420, I think. And there was a while when they would even classify 480 stats as they were like, well, it's quasi-HD. It's HD upgradable, convertible, blah, blah, blah. And then there was like the halfway step to 720. And there was 1080i.
1080i and then 1080p.
It was a 1080i. That's what I had.
Full 1080p.
The CRT was a 1080i. I remember, and I remember being like, "What am I missing? Where?
Look at all the 80s I have. I have 10 of them.
Anyway,
10 of the 80s.
It was a golden age of technology.
TV's
in my parents' basement somewhere.
That's good. It's nice for the unwanted guest. The unloved guest gets that TV. I had, when I lived at the Kennedy Ward, I had the rear projection flat screen.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The thing when you carry that, what I hated about those, if you remember rear projections, how off the weight was if you carry it.
Oh, yeah.
And if you carry it the wrong way, one slight tip, and the whole thing is just going down. And it had the built-in DVD player into the TV so that you press it. It was a Panasonic, I think, and it would come out, and then you could put the DVD player until one day the ejection button broke, and that was the end of it. And to this day, I guess Embrace of the Vampire is still inside there. Lucky treat for whoever gets that one. Anyway.
Hey, that's all. I had my graveyard
that's
of
nice.
Lost tech.
That's nice. And did you throw it away, or did you end up still keeping it?
I threw it away. I threw everything away.
You threw it away? That's too bad.
Everything away. I was remorseless.
Did you even look on eBay to see if you could sell that HD DVD player?
No.
I bet there's a whole community of people who are like, I need parts for my HD DVD player that's breaking down.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there was, but it's a slippery slope. Because you start with the one, I could get $42 from this, maybe, if I list it and I put it back up. At some point, you just have to say, I am going to forego income.
It's not worth it.
In the name of just getting all of this done right now, today. And, you know, like, we could have a hoot nanny up in my primary attic now. There's so much space.
What do you think would be more in demand nostalgia-wise, HD TVD, DVD, or laser discs?
Laser discs.
Oh,
really?
Don't you think?
Laser discs are huge.
Oh, good news for Dr. Mattis.
Yeah, for hipster, for I would say cinephile hipsters, Laserdisc is what vinyl is for audiophile hipsters.
I think I've said this before, but there was a Criterion Collection art book that basically had all of the covers that had ever been released for the Criterion Collection. And the most fascinating thing that I discovered while perusing this, there's like a big montage in the back, like the last 20 pages are just like all of the covers, like one after the other. But the most amusing thing that I discovered while perusing through this was that the Criterion Collection released Ghostbusters.
Oh.
There is a Criterion Collection Ghostbusters Laserdisc because they were one of the only like real Laserdisc companies. So there are a bunch of movies like that that are like not necessarily Criterion movies, but have a Criterion release.
And the big one is the theatrical cut of Star Wars, right? The only place you can see the theatrical cut of Star Wars.
Without any of the
Without any of the extra special gold-plated diamond sapphire edition Lucas special is
Laserdisc. Jabba the Hutt.
Well, what I thought the VHS, they did a pre-special edition VHS.
They did.
I have that, too. That is also in my parents' basement.
Yes, a VHS,
that's
got to
hurt your eyes, though, right? You can't watch.
You know,
Could you watch VHS?
Well, no, now it would be terrible. But there's also a VHS nostalgia community, and those people make me sick.
I got a bunch of deviants. I want.
Bunch
I would love to
disgusting
get
perverts.
I need to get a VHS player because I got a bunch of cassettes. I'd love to play them.
Oh boy, fellas, how are you, Victorino? Sonny, what's
Sonny,
going on, boys?
Sonny, what's going on? How is it down there?
Pass.
Okay,
Victorino.
Well, two things. One, I was very excited about. The reopening of things last week. And I had done two things. One, I played golf with two friends of ours, Mike Warren and Dan Halper, an 18-hole out in Burke, which is way out there.
It's not by me.
Yes.
Burke is not way out there. Burke is 20 minutes from where you live.
It took me 30 minutes with no traffic. It took me 30 minutes. It was nuts. It was off the beltway.
30 minutes is what it takes to go anywhere in Washington. Don't go talking about Burke as way out there.
It's not true. When I lived in Alexandria, it took me 12 minutes to get to the office.
There is no place in the Washington, D.C. area that you can go in under 30
minutes.
In
any event, it was 18 holes. I shot a 93.
Okay.
The truth was,
that's not bad.
Except they were all par threes.
Oh, you played the Burke Lake Park par three.
Yes, Burke Lake Park par three, which is a total ego booster. I got like several pars.
Did you ever take the kids there to ride the train when they were
little? No.
Yeah, they've got like a 1/4 scale mile train, a 1/4 scale train, and you hop on, and they have like a real carousel. And it's a great place. When your kid's like four, it's perfect.
I know.
So you've missed it. Sorry.
Yeah, it's over. But it's one of those morale booster ones because you're actually, if you can get a couple pars, you feel good about yourself. The worst part is Halper had the best score. And then it came me, and then Mike. Mike had a hard day. But it was nice to see those guys at a distance.
What did Dan shoot?
87, 88. We were having a better day. And then Warren was like 100, I think, or something like that. But, so it was good. And then the other thing is that same day, I went into the city to have lunch. And I went to the Palm, which the front part was allowed to be open because the windows are retractable. So they're wall-sized windows, right? The front is all window. Where you remember, like George Will and Krauthammer, they would sit in the front. Charles would sit in the front. So that is retractable, and so that became outdoor seating. And I was there with two colleagues, and I told them it was very important to support the restaurant community. So order as much as you can. And so that was that. I actually did not have that much.
What was the damage?
Oh, I don't know because Harrison picked it up. God bless him. God bless him. I had a couple martinis, some red wine. And then the problem was I just thought I could slip out through the window thing instead of having to. You know what I'm talking about, Sonny? So I walked.
So you tried to hop the bar there?
So I go through the window thing. I forget there's all these bushes.
Yeah, there's a whole array of bushes there.
Yeah, but like they're high too. So I basically made my way through the bramble. And then magically, I was home.
How lit were you?
I got home, thanks to Uber. I got home, and my daughter was in the middle of her virtual piano lesson. So I'm walking up the stairs. Kate already opens the door, and she goes, upstairs. Go upstairs right now. Go upstairs. Right. I couldn't like, and I'm like, what? What's happening? And then upstairs, she goes, go upstairs and go to bed. Go upstairs. I said, it's 4:30. That was.
I'm so glad we're talking about the lighthouse.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, we'll get there. We'll get there in a second. Hold on. Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that because, I'd like to know if that was us, who is who? And I'm telling you right now, I'd be Willem Dafoe. Okay. I'm telling you right now.
There's only two characters you can choose from.
It's not a movie about you and me. Katz. I know. I was thinking
and,
about
and
that.
And you're
JBL.
Willem Dafoe.
I'm the mermaid.
Yes.
Okay. We'll get to that in a second. Here, well, there I had a transition, but okay, we're going to use the transition anyway. Which was it was good. I had a steak there, but I wanted to get a wedge salad because I love the wedge, but I don't love wedgies. Speaking of which, Paul Crookston is back on the show to talk about our sponsor, Tommy John. Paul, take it away.
Thanks, Vic. I happen to hate wedgies too. That's why I'm here to talk about the Father's Day sale at TommyJohn.com. As we all know, Father's Day can be stressful trying to find the perfect gift for dad. Thankfully, Tommy John, the revolutionary underwear and clothing brand, knows that comfort is for everyone. Yes, even your dad. Give him the softest, most breathable base layer he's ever worn. Tommy John's new and improved men's underwear is now twice as durable as his current pair, and infinitely more luxurious. I guarantee it. Plus, Tommy John is offering their best Father's Day deal ever, with Subbeacon listeners getting 25% off site-wide, including easy-to-gift sets that you can order straight from your phone directly to Dad's door. If you've worn Tommy John before, you know their underwear and undershirts feel great. That's because they are built for next-level comfort. The same goes for their lounge pants, lazy day joggers, right up to their soft and Zoom meeting-approved polos and t-shirts. For the softest you or your dad has ever worn, Tommy John has you covered. Be sure to get your order in before June 17th to ensure that your gift arrives before Father's Day. Tommy John is so confident in their underwear that if you don't love your first pair, you can get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. So, here's how you can nab the perfect gift for dad this year. 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/subbeacon. That's TommyJohn.com/subbeacon for 25% off site-wide. Subbeacon, S-U-B-B-E-A-C-O-N. See site for details. And back to you guys.
Thank you, Paul. Notice how calm and relaxed he sounded ever since they legalized marijuana. I think there's something going on with Paul. It was very mellow and chill. I'm kidding. I am kidding. Paul is a saint. He's just taking his sweet time. Okay. Before we get to the big movie, I did want to jump in here. Can I just mention this? I mentioned this. I told Sonny. I don't know if I told you, JVL. I told you I wanted to see it. I finally saw Public Enemies. Michael Mann movie. You know what? I remember being so excited to wanting to see it. And then I remember hearing people say they didn't like it. And so I ended up not watching it. And so I was kind of, I don't know why people didn't like it. So I finally watched it. I thought it was fantastic. Why did people not like it? Is it because did it remind them too much of Heat? Was it the weird sort of they switched cameras at some point? It was kind of weird. And then the other thing was, or did they think like the characters like Christian Bale's character was not developed enough? If you can remember, I'm just throwing this out there, but you'd have to reach back.
There were definitely some like weird things about Public Enemies when it was first released. One of them was that it was shot on, it's one of the first big, really big movies from like a genius level auteur that was shot on the digital film. So, or digital videotape, or like whichever camera system that they were using.
Some of the shots looked very
computers.
Yeah. So it's actually a fascinating movie. Like this in Miami Vice, and I think to a greater extent this has like a very distinct aesthetic to it. One of the things that these cameras do, it allows much better light pickup in low light situations. So you have these kind of smeary visuals that are largely a function of like low light, but also like not needing as much light to pick up the image. But like this has a really, really great effect in a few very distinct scenes. The forest shootout in particular, I love that sequence so much. The one
it's place in Wisconsin. I think it was called like the Bohemian Lodge or something like that. That's true. Yeah. That really happened.
So there's this great shot in that sequence where Stephen Graham, Scarface, or whoever.
Pretty boy. No. Babyface Nelson.
Babyface Nelson. Yeah. He gets hit while he's trying to shoot his Tommy gun, and he just starts shooting it up in the air, and the you can see like the individual flashes.
Yes, yes. Of the muscle,
and it's a fantastically beautiful shot.
There are several shots like that.
And there's just all sorts of weird. I mean, the big problem with this movie is that it is set up more or less as a Heat style film where you have like the male alphas, one good, one bad, squaring off against each other, right? But the problem is that Christian Bale's character is essentially an incompetent. Like, he is the one who is playing the Pacino character. Except if we're using Heat as the antecedent, mm-hmm. right? The problem with the movie is that the real hero of this thing is actually Stephen Lang's character. Is actually the guy who actually shoots.
Winstead, from Avatar.
Yeah. So Stephen Lang's character is actually like the alpha male, no bullshit.
Yeah, he's really good.
I am the competent one who is here to set things mm-hmm. right. But he doesn't appear till halfway through the movie. So it's a very strangely structured film. I think that might be one of the reasons why people were, you know, kind of put off by it. People also didn't like the like Johnny Depp love subplot. They thought it was, you know,
Marion Cotillard. But Marion Cotillard, and she was fantastic at that.
No,
that,
but
I mean, that was A+ across the board.
Public Enemies is a movie that has like undergone the reappreciation process. I think it is like rising in esteem, just like Miami Vice, which is now considered.
Is that right?
One of Michael Mann's best films and one of the best films.
It's funny watching Public Enemies now because it's star studded in retrospect. Even
somewhere, John Podhords is listening to this whole segment.
Going crazy.
You can't even understand what they're saying.
You can't understand.
The sound mix is wrong.
Heat is a terrible movie.
Get off my lawn.
Wow. We're really trying to trigger him. Pretty Boy Floyd is very brief in this movie, and he was
Channing Tatum. Great, like one scene performance.
Yeah.
This movie's got
Jason
a lot of
Clark.
This movie has a ton of great actors. Jason Clark.
Why didn't we do that for this week?
Giovanni Ribisi. We should do it next week.
Giovanni Ribisi. Yeah, no, it's very good. It's very good.
And what's his name? From the last season of True Detective and Blade.
Wesley Snipes.
No. He played the villain in Blade.
You said Blade. Oh.
Stephen Lang.
Oh,
Stephen Lang is the villain in Blade.
No. Stephen Dorff.
Stephen Dorff.
Yes.
Yeah, Homer Stephen Van Dorf. Meter.
Sorry.
Homer Van Meter. It's crazy. And Billy Crudup as J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah. Anyway.
Great cast. Okay.
Yeah, we'll do this Sorry. Next week. Preview
Apologies.
Of next week's episode.
Instead, as we mentioned earlier, I wanted to see this movie because it looked interesting. I should have known that it was from the makers of Under the Silver Lake, so I wouldn't understand what's happening.
It's not. Well, it's from the same studio. The
same studio. We're talking about The Lighthouse, which came out last year. It was a black and white film. Sunny.
1.37:1.
I was going to say
1.19.
It's a 1.19. It's not widescreen.
As a square.
Yes, it's shot. And
it
using
Instagram
old lenses, actual old lenses they used. I read somewhere, and it stars two people, Robert Pattinson, Willem Dafoe. Sonny, do you want to give a? You saw this earlier. You want
no, but I don't even want to. Before
no?
we even start,
what?
Sonny, Victorino, why?
Well, I was curious.
What
I don't
on
know.
Earth
I thought, oh, this looks interesting.
Led you to believe because we said last week we said Vic.
I know.
You pick.
I know. I
the
really
world
blew
is yours,
it. I blew
Anything
it. I
go,
give
want.
Me another chance. Give me another chance because I blew
you said
it. I didn't
light,
see it.
And I thought to
I
myself,
wanted to pick a movie that
when I looked it up on Wikipedia, having never heard about it before, and I thought to myself, what the fuck is Vic thinking?
Two men isolation. It looked interesting. It looked interesting, and yet I realized I made a bad mistake. A terrible mistake. But Sonny liked it. That's all I should have known. I should have known. And so again, like I said, like you're like porn stars. It can't just be normal anymore. It's got to be wacky, wild, and crazy. All sorts of things going on. So yeah, I fully admit I made a mistake. I look forward to the next time I get to choose a movie I have already seen and like. I took a chance, and
You made a mistake.
I made a
mistake. You tried something new and different.
I did. I said, well,
why would anyone do
that? 49. I like these guys. And I really gave it my, I was sober, you know, that was always good.
Actually watched this after going to the Palm.
All right. No, this time I did not. But that was a weird movie. Okay.
It is. It's a weird movie.
Sonny, explain something.
The Lighthouse stars Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe as two Wiccans. They're the keepers of a lighthouse off the coast of somewhere or another. It's the early... the late 1800s. They are the movie is about the madness of isolation, which is actually why it makes it a perfect movie for our current moment.
Yeah.
The Robert Pattinson plays the younger of the two. Obviously, he's training to be a lighthouse keeper. He's the underling of Willem Dafoe's character, who is a harsh taskmaster. He demands that the floors be swabbed, ye dog, and all that good stuff. It's a very strange movie. I'm not going to lie. It's a very strange movie. It is very much.
You have to give people more plot than that if you're going to tell them it's a strange movie, Sonny.
Well, I mean, I
you can't just say, oh, there are two guys, one training to be a lighthouse keeper.
You have
to explain to the people why this is strange.
Cthulhu.
Well, no, it's not Cthulhu. It's just a Kraken. They're on the lighthouse. Robert Pattinson is slowly going mad because he's actually an insane person who has committed murder in the past. We learn as the film goes along. I don't know how to describe the plot of this. The plot of this is actually harder to describe than the plot of Under the Silver Lake in some ways.
Have to get through 4 weeks.
They just have to get through four weeks. As the action progresses. It becomes clear
air quotes around action.
Yeah.
As
the action progresses, it becomes clear that Robert Pattinson is not a reliable narrator. He is imagining things. We see, you know, what could be either dream sequences or waking nightmares or something from his point of view. That kind of distorts everything else in the movie that we see. So this is very much a movie where you have to kind of just go along for the ride. What I love about it, and this will perhaps be a dodge, but what I love about it is just the complete and utter hammy insanity of the two performances. Willem Dafoe obviously is like known for playing a good crazy person, and his Thomas Wake is a very fine example of that, just, you know, thundering oratory and all that good stuff. And Robert Eggers, the director, he made The Witch, which is one of my favorite horror movies of the last, you know, 15 years or so. Robert Eggers has a way of shooting both of these characters very starkly, it's very much, you know, kind of low angled up, lots of shadows on the face and on the walls. And Robert Pattinson is fantastic in this as the you know, kind of in over his head, but also quickly going insane, junior Wiki at this lighthouse. There are also, as JVL hinted, there is some tentacle action, some hot tentacle action in this film, and also some hot mermaid action. If you've ever wanted to know what's down there for a mermaid,
it works.
You know.
It works is the answer. Yes.
Anyway, I wouldn't say I love this movie. I like it. I admire certain things about it. I do think it is a little obtuse and obscurantist. I don't think I'm using that word right. The unreliability of the narrators makes the whole thing like not quite work for me. Except for the fact that it does also kind of work. I think it is, it's a great movie about insanity and like the madness that comes with isolation and being around somebody you hate constantly. And I you know, it's not going to be for everyone. It's a divisive movie, that's for sure.
JVL, what did you think about this?
Who cares what I think, Vic? You know, I am confused as to why you are so calm about this, because last week
I know
you lost your ever-loving mind about a movie that was truly good, and you said things like, "What is the point?
America, real America, don't watch this movie about
why
LA.
Are you not up in arms over this thing?"
I don't know. I thought about this, and and on the quadrants, it's funny because the duration is an A. It's less than 2 hours. The violence is an A.
What is the A for the violence? There's one scene of violence, basically.
It was pretty good. And then and the sex nudity was an A. It does include some self abuse, as Willem Dafoe would say. But but the plot was a D, because I just didn't understand. I was anticipating that you were all going to tell me you knew the ending. Like, you can explain it to me.
Well, I mean, we know the ending as much as Eggers knows the ending. So you were not, like, actively angry at the movie while you were sitting there watching The Lighthouse?
Well, no, it was maybe because it was not as long, maybe because I wasn't sort of in a surly mood after, having been a little bit more sober watching this movie. It was weird. It was weird. But you're right. I don't have the same reaction. I don't know why. But it does feel like, it's
one
weird
of these
New
films,
England. New England is weird. And
one of these films
they don't talk.
Is a
these
great film,
yes.
And another is a precious bit of cinematic masturbation.
You did not like.
Are just like,
I know.
You're going full anti.
We were just talking about this before the show. I was trying to figure out if I was going to go into this movie and you were going to be like, oh, yeah, it was totally obvious about what happened in the end. And I was thinking of different scenarios. And one of them was you were going to say, oh, yeah, it was so obvious that Robert Pattinson is a mermaid, because in the end he's covered in barnacles. He's naked, and the seagulls represent all the sailors and they're eating him out literally. I thought that's what you were going to say.
That's an interesting
you like
read.
That one. Okay, I thought you were going to say, oh, it's so obvious that this is all Robert Pattinson's head. It's a dream. And in fact, he's still in Canada chopping wood, and the guy is still there. Also, it's present day, it's 2019. It's like The Village in M. Night Shyamalan. But no, so you don't really know why he is naked, covered in barnacles, being eaten by seagulls.
Because he's Prometheus. That's why. Because every
he dared
this is all
to,
like,
is that it? Because he dared to the
yes,
light
this
the
is,
thing
this is the
what
whole,
was
the,
in
all
there.
All of this is symbology, where Willem Dafoe's character is Proteus, the old god of the sea, and Pattinson is Prometheus, and this is why he went too close to the light, and now he's having the birds peck out his liver. But it's also about him leaving purgatory, because that was purgatory, and you'll notice when we
I knew you had an answer.
He is no longer dressed. He is not actually on the island anymore. You notice he's on the landscape is different, and the buildings are gone, and he's naked, and so he has moved out of purgatory and into all of this is just like half-baked, artsy-fartsy film school rejects kind of stuff. And there are some things to like about it, and I'm glad the movie was made.
I think Willem Dafoe is a great actor, and he delivers some amazing. Convincing. I liked it. I mean, they're based on these Lighthouse journals and Herman Melville, and it's very piratey, but he could get away with it. I mean, it sounds silly if you try to do what he says, you're neglecting your duties, laddie. But when he does it, I don't know. I like it.
Were you guys bothered by watching it on home theater? Because So, Sonny, you had probably the best experience of us because you were able to watch this on plasma, and plasma has better black levels than anything else.
So black.
But even plasma can't give you what, commercial grade projection can give you in a theater.
In a theater.
Yeah,
and
I saw it in a theater.
This movie needs... Oh, you saw it in a theater? Yeah. Because I was constantly annoyed The only thing I liked about the movie is the composition of it.
Black and white is very hard. So
and yeah. the black, but it's beautifully shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of care. It takes a lot of work to make it
look good.
And I have a pretty good LCD set, and I still found it quasi unwatchable just because my black levels weren't good enough to show me what he was trying to do here. And so I was kind of annoyed by that. I feel like this movie should have been in the theater. And I really liked the gimmick of the size of the frame too, because it's all about claustrophobia, you know, like, and they really emphasize it when Pattinson bangs his head. So the first time Pattinson walks into the room of the lighthouse, he bangs his head on the top of the frame, which sort of is a wonderful bit of reminding us, the viewers, like, oh crap, like, we're in a really small space here. And I like that. But I don't know. When you saw it hit the four quadrants pretty hard, Vic. Nudity, tentacles, mermaid porn.
That's what I said. It's got it all except for plot. Sonny, when you saw it in the theater, did the curtains only go halfway then? Did it just cover?
No. They went all the way. I saw that. I saw it at the Landmark East Street, I'm pretty sure. And it was, I probably liked it more, frankly, this time because I kind of knew what I was getting into. I looked back at my first Letterboxd rating of this movie. It was only 3 stars. So 3 out of 5 stars. And I bumped it up to 4, or either 3.5 or 4 out of 5 stars this time. Because I think especially once it hits like full crazy manic stride that like, I can appreciate what Eggers is going for, just the like complete psychotic breakdown of this individual. Whether or not that is a compelling feature film, I don't know. I much prefer The Witch. I don't know if you guys have seen The Witch.
You couldn't pay me to see that.
No. Yeah, you wouldn't enjoy it.
Not
because,
for me.
Because it would be too scary or it'd be too bizarre and weird, and I'd be saying the same thing. What happened?
All of
the
above.
End?
No, it would be too scary for JBL. Mm. And also like just because it's actually pretty straightforward. The plot of The Witch is actually pretty straightforward.
Oh, I'm sold.
It would just be
I just want something I can understand. The other thing, JVL, I don't have the. I'm just worn down. I'm just worn down from. I don't have the energy that I had last week
to get hate it. Up.
Yeah,
you're all spent.
I mean,
I like the sound design. If you like independent cinema, then you should be happy that a movie like this can be made and that the economics of it work. Mm-hmm. And there are things to like about it. Again, I like the sound design a ton. I love the design of the foghorn. I liked the way it was filmed and wished I could have seen it in a theater for that reason. But as for the story itself, it's so precious. And it's, you know, there's alcoholism and homoeroticism and Greek myths and Lovecraftian horror. But none of it ever really pays off. And I don't mind movies where the film refuses to answer questions. It is okay for a movie to raise questions and not answer them. With one caveat, which is that the director has to have the answers himself.
And you're thinking, you know, he doesn't.
I think no. I think for him, the point of the movie is to raise these questions. And that's what You, the viewer, are given no sense that there is an actual answer to any of it. And the combination of the pastiche of all the symbolism plus the pacing, which is glacial, plus the sort of aimless ambiguity of it. No, I felt like you last week.
Yes, no, but I agree.
I was like,
I agree.
What's the point?
No, I agree with all those points. Also, a little less.
But man, if I could jerk it to Scrimshaw, boy, would I. That's some hot stuff. You know, I hear the original Club International.
Mermaid. I don't understand.
The original Club International was done on Scrimshaw.
On Scrimshaw? That's some good Scrimshaw. The other thing is, you know, a lesson in if you want, if you offer somebody a drink,
come on, Victorino,
I know,
that was
really
you.
Good. That was great. I would say if you know, so you want, if somebody doesn't drink, they have their reasons. Don't force that person to drink, because I really think that was the turning point in that movie. Is once that then they went.
That's the other read on this. The other reason is actually it's a very personal story about you and I. With you know, you're the master, you're the old veteran.
You can't drink with
I was the
not?
Young guy. You were like, have a drink, and I was you know, I was always like, eh, I don't really drink.
Next thing you know, we're dancing.
Let's
together.
Go to Crystal's office and see what he's got in there.
Next thing you know, we're slow dancing.
Okay. So, yeah. It's basically a movie about our 20s together.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Lovely. Do you have any other thoughts? This is a short show. We could talk about Public Enemies again. Go ahead.
I do love the, again, I can't remember, but there's a great moment toward the end where he's dragging an axe around, and the score changes ever so slightly to sound exactly like the score from The Shining, which made me wonder again if this was, you know, an extended effort to, you know, do like The Shining. The Shining is a movie about isolation and claustrophobia and the madness that comes with that.
Even I caught that, and that's probably because I was sober.
Yeah.
Well, I'm open to the idea that Willem Dafoe's character doesn't even exist. That really this whole thing is an episode that takes place in purgatory as Pattinson has died.
It's like Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah. Anyway,
Jacob's Ladder, at least at the end.
You have to have the answers to your own questions. When you're telling a story, you have to know the answers to your own questions. You can't just be like, yeah, look, it's all so vague. You could interpret it many different ways.
There's one moment that I thought was funny, which is when Robert Pattinson insults Willem Dafoe about everything and, you know, his farts and everything else.
Your farts!
But also his cooking. And Willem Dafoe is genuinely hurt. When he says,
My lobster?
Not even my lobster. And I thought, you know what? I love lobster.
You like my lobster.
Yeah.
That's a great scene. And again, I really love
genuinely
snippets
hurt.
Of this movie. Yeah. Like that. And I really enjoy the whole kind of like getting to know the island, like watching Pattinson go about his work and like do the various little odd jobs that he's required to do.
It's a weird world out there, you know.
Do you know they built a lighthouse?
No,
really?
It's out in Nova Scotia.
Right? No, that
they
is
that
a
in Nova Scotia?
They built it for yes, it was done in Canada, but they built both the outbuilding and the lighthouse itself out of wood. So not actually out of stone, but that was an elaborate piece of practical set building. Kind of awesome.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say about the that sort of New England culture, which is weird. A good movie that sort of reflects sort of weird New England island culture is an old movie, the comedy, The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. If you get a chance to see that, where the Russian sub, which is commanded by a very young Alan Arkin, lands on a New England island like Nantucket or one of these things. And, you know, all sorts of silly 1960s Cold War antics. But the way the characters behave, people who live on these places, I mean, it's a very particular sort of people who live there. And I'm not even talking about, you know, they're not rich either. You know, but I mean, they're just, you know, it's a very Spartan type of a culture, according to my in-laws, who tell me that movie was very spot on in that way. So that's all I have to say about that. Anything else?
Protean farms.
Oh, you know what?
From men's minds and melt and scorching Promethean plunder. I mean, this is
I'll tell you what I wanted to do.
You weren't offended in the name of Lovecraft? Sonny, you're a Lovecraft guy, aren't you?
No, I hate Lovecraft.
No, me too. Never mind. Okay.
I didn't read her or him. But I really, it made me want to drink potable water. That's what it made me want to drink watching this movie. Because
it didn't make you want to drink kerosene?
Oh,
kerosene
my gosh.
And honey?
That was impressive. But you know what? You
That's
get to a
thing
point.
You've done, right?
I know somebody, well.
Just tell it to me straight. You've done it once.
No. No.
Didn't you guys in the McDonald's Society used to like go get a cabin out in the mountains mm-hmm. once
yeah,
a year?
We did. It was very much like the lighthouse in certain ways.
But you drank kerosene. At one point, you guys ran out of scotch, and somebody said, look, we'll just do a shot.
I'll tell you what. I do know. I know a friend of mine, no names, who actually contemplated, like, they ran out of stuff to drink, and he was looking at, like, a cleaning bottle from under the sink, like, well, if we add
his
this.
His name is Beav Busteris.
No, he does not, definitely not him. Well, college friend. But anyway, it's, yeah, but he did not, thank God. But you get to that point, especially, I guess, if you're stuck in a place like
college
that.
College friend. Hold on. I'm going through the inventory here.
I will tell you after the show. Speaking of lobster, you counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurants, your food will be delivered at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep communities we operate in safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code SUBBEACON. Don't forget, that's code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. What happened to Michael?
I just texted you a name.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Good call. You know.
Come on.
I know. You know me and my people.
We really are.
It's something else.
I knew of your college friends who you were talking about.
I know. You did. That's really impressive. Ding, ding, ding. That's really, really impressive. Wow.
Sonny, did you catch that?
No, you're just sitting there. I have no idea who that person is.
Okay, yeah.
No, of course you don't, but you understand, from just the tiny little bit that Vic gave us, I knew which of his college friends it was.
He looked at it, he thought, okay.
Yep.
Like
I know the back of his head.
And it's fat.
What is coming out? What is coming out? Do you remember when we went to see Men in Black? Speaking of which, do you remember when we went to see Men in Black, JVL?
I do remember.
Do you remember? And like towards the end, I had a serious gastrointestinal attack. Do you remember this?
I do remember that.
I could not. It was right around the time, like, I almost had an accident at the point where they're in the tunnel and the car goes upside down and they play the Elvis music. Do you remember this with Tommy Lee Jones and the car goes
upside down?
Yes. And it goes upside down through the tunnel, like the Lincoln Tunnel or wherever it was. I thought, this is it. It's happening now, but I don't want to miss it because the action was so good at Men in Black. And somehow I made it through sweating and chills back to your apartment, and you were so kind.
Where you destroyed it.
I just said matches.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Do what you got to do, buddy.
Houston, we have a problem. Okay. Anyway, what is there anything coming out that we could watch or?
No.
Nothing.
World is ended.
Okay, I don't even see Sonny's face. I just see the
microphone. Do I get to pick a movie one of these days?
Yes, JVL, your turn. It's your turn. Pick something good.
I'll think about it.
You know what I was thinking of?
Public Enemies?
No.
I was thinking, you know what movie came to my mind recently? It was Almost Famous. It's a great movie that did not, and it still frustrates me that it did terrible in the box office. It really did bad.
You and I saw that together, too.
It's like the reason why you go into journalism. None of those things actually happened to me, and yet that's why I would have gone into journalism and become Cameron Crowe. That's it. So no other thoughts on
no.
the movie? Okay, wow. Well,
tentacles.
No, I don't know what was happening there, but, you know. Corrections and shout-outs. I mentioned earlier that I played golf with our friends, and one of them was Dan Halper. He and my Free Beacon colleague, Alana Goodman, have a new book out, A Convenient Death, The Mysterious Demise of Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein? Epstein.
Epstein.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
So to speak, from Sentinel Books, order it on Amazon. You'll be hanging on every word.
I hope they sell movie rights to this.
Oh, yeah. No, right.
Man, I hope they get the movie rights to this sold. Yeah,
I know.
That'd be so great.
I know. There's a lot of competition for that, but that would be great for them. It was like the number one book in the category of murder and mayhem. I said to Daniel, I said, did you ever think you'd have that in murder and mayhem? Anyway.
But wasn't it like true life murder and mayhem?
Something like
true
that.
Crime.
True crime. Yeah. Mayhem was one of the words, though. So good luck to those guys. That sounds great. Anything else, guys? Any other thoughts?
No.
Time flies. Okay. Well.
It's murder and mayhem. True accounts.
There you go.
With the subcategory.
Go. Okay. Well, that's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Sunny Bunch at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon on a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Any of you guys have anything?
I don't have anything. JVL, come on. Help us.
I have something, but it's...
Worst episode ever.
Self-indulgent.
I agree.
Well,
I'm
we
sorry
gave them the
that
best episode
the
last week, so...
Right, no. I don't... Yeah, you can't get it like...
You know, they can't all be home runs. So,
it's like the Sopranos episode when there's nobody that gets killed. Those were the worst. Okay.
I have a parable.
Ooh.
Like Jesus. I'm here to teach the people.
The people.
We needed to replace our kitchen faucet a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I mean, first of all, it should be clear to anybody listening to this, you never buy plumbing hardware at a big box store. That's for suckers. You go to a plumbing supply store because what happens is Moen and Delta will roll two things off the assembly line that look exactly the same. One of them, the innards of it are made of plastic. The other, the innards are made of brass. And the one at the plumbing supply will cost twice as much, but it will last for forever. So I was comparing these two Delta faucets for the kitchen sink, and one of them...
So wait. I'm sorry. The sucker's bet is to go to the place where it's cheaper?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that thing will be dead in like 5 years.
Okay. I always go with the one the plumber takes out of his van when he replaces
that's
it.
That's normally a good idea, because they get them all from plumbing supply.
Okay.
So there are two faucets. They are identical, but one of them has the touch-free system.
Mm.
Where you just tap anywhere on this giant gooseneck faucet, and it turns it on and turns it off for you.
Suspicious already.
And I looked at it, and I thought to myself, boy, oh, I want that. That looks awesome. And but then I thought, well, you know, I mean, we are in a global pandemic, and there's a recession, and unemployment is at 20, maybe 25%. I should save the handful of dollars it is to do this, because it's a very nice faucet to begin with. What do I need the extra fanciness for? And since the very...
What was the price difference?
You know, it doesn't really matter what it was.
It does.
My wife
though
listens to this fucking show. I'm not going to say while we're recording what the price difference is.
Okay.
But I was responsible and I got the cheaper one, and I have resented it every time I have touched it. Ever since it was installed. And honestly, I don't know how much more I can take.
Did you install it yourself?
No, I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't, because plumbing is one of the things where I almost always go to a professional and have them do it. And this thing was, because the problem with kitchen faucets is actually just access, right? I mean, trying to get back there is hard. And it took this guy like almost 2 hours to get it in. And so it would have taken me a day and a half. And then I would have called the plumber to do it anyway.
I have a story.
Well, let me finish mine, which is that at some point when my wife is not here, I'm going to buy one of the other faucets. I'm going to have the plumber back, and I'm going to have him swap the touchless in, because again, they're identical. She'll never know the difference. And I will then take this one and like give it to charity or something, or just throw it away, because I can't, I get filled with bile and anger every time I have to, like a farmer, turn on the faucet by pulling on the little... We have technology now. Why do I have to pull on it like a fucking mope?
Like,
won't she realize the difference when she
goes
like
near it and it just goes on
the lever anymore?
You just tap it. Now you can still use the lever. Now see, that's the
or
beauty of
can
it.
You wave your hand over and it goes on like that? Is that how
no,
that works?
No, there are ones that do that. I don't like that.
It's like for
this one you just touch. anywhere on the metal, and it turns it on. And so there's still, you can still use the lever. And so she won't have any idea. She'll just be
sake. She may accidentally she'll bump be still it. She'll using bump it, the, and then she'll be like,
and then she'll just be like, oh, I must have broken it. She won't. But the lesson is that you should always get what you really want. Don't don't ever tell yourself, oh, I'm going to save $80 here and get the cheaper faucet because I'm trying to be responsible. It isn't worth it. It's no, not worth it.
That is
you should always just gratify yourself immediately.
That is 100% true with certain wines that I have in the basement that I have not told my wife about. Oh, wait, she listens to this show. Anyway, Sonny, you said you had a story.
Yeah, very quickly. So when we were, I don't know, maybe 6 months before we decided to sell our house in Virginia, we realized we needed to like get the kitchen faucet replaced because it was leaking and like there was... there were all sorts of issues. So we called, I went to the store and I bought the, you know, the, I went to the big box store and I bought the hardware and
like I, and a I, sucker.
And I brought it back to the house and I'm looking at it and I'm like, boy, this looks pretty easy. I'm pretty sure I could do this all on my own. I think I could probably do it. And I'm looking at it and I'm looking at the box and I'm looking at it. And I'm looking at the box, and then I was like, you know what? No, I'm just going to call a guy. I'm just going to pay somebody $200 to come out and do it. And I'm glad I did, because the guy got here, and, you know, it, as JBL says, it's an access problem. You have to, like, get under the sink, and you got to get, like, get your hands up in there, and it's hard. But because of the leak, all of the bolts had fused. It was, like, all rusted and fused together. So he had to get a circular saw out into that tiny little space and, like, cut it out from both sides, basically, from the top and from the bottom. And what should have been, like, a 90-minute job for the guy ended up taking, like, 5 hours. It took him 5 hours to do. It would have taken me 5 hours to get to the point where I was just throwing things... And
it's like,
F it. We're calling the plumber. I am like very much in the camp of like, unless it is like a flapper in a toilet or something.
Yeah.
Just call somebody to come and do it. Cause you never know what's going on with water. Like water can trip you up in 100 different ways.
First thing I do is I call either Kate or her father.
And they say, I'm sure it's fine.